You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
To restart the game. And this one carrying into the end zone about 4 yards deep. Here comes Dixon to the 5. Left hash marks 10, 15. Hits a hole hard. He's to the 25, 30. Breaks into the clear. Keyshawn Nixon is off to the races. It's Secretary of Belmont. Down the split in time. No one will catch him. It's a touchdown. My goodness.
Came into the game, Wayne. Punched the ball with a great entry. Didn't practice all week. And he just took it right up the gut. Through the heart of the Minnesota Viking coverage unit.
All right, what's up, guys? Welcome to Packers Total Access. My name is Clayton. You can check us out on Packernet.com. You can find me on Twitter at Packers_Access. If you'd like to email the show, you can send a message to PackersTotalAccess@gmail.com. You'd like to text the show, you can send a text message to 865-658-5824. We got a special guest on the pod with us. For those of you listening on the podcast tomorrow, we're obviously live on YouTube and Twitter. Appreciate everybody jumping in here and being a part of the conversation. I know some people are winding down from the work day. But hopefully we get some people in here to give us some feedback as well. Cause we got, like I said, on the pod today, we got Ryan Schlipp, Mr. Pack Daddy himself from Packernet Podcast, the pod father, as I call him. What's been going on, man? You have a good day?
Yeah, I'm kind of whipped a little bit. I immediately went outside and got some burgers rolling on the grill and haven't done that very much, this year since it's been nice outside. And now I just smell like charcoal and burgers, and I'm just happy just sitting down here just basking in my own odor right now. It's so delicious. Those burgers were amazing.
Bro, there's nothing like it. I went to do laundry the other day, and I'd spent the whole day smoking a roast, and then I did some ribs at the end of the day. And I went to do laundry and dumped the laundry. I was like, what is that smell? It was that shirt that I was sitting with all day. Oh, it was amazing. But yeah, man, and I seen a Hegemeister Park, a restaurant there in Green Bay. They had posted some – I love following restaurants in Green Bay. I don't know what it is, man, but just stories on Instagram of them, you know, posting shots of them cooking and all that stuff. But I think they said it was 80 degrees in Green Bay and everybody was out on the patio. I love it, dude. Yeah. That looks like a really cool place to be in the springtime, which gets me excited about the draft, and I know we've been talking about it. Both the social media, I heard your pod this morning, really excited to go up there in the spring because I've never experienced it in the spring. And I know it could be still cold. That's totally cool, but I might even slip up to Door County. But let's just jump into that, man. I heard your rant today, and I got fired up, man, because the people that are knocking this whole NFL draft in Green Bay, it blows my mind how ignorant some people can be that actually live right there that are in the media. It's like you don't even take the time to think this through, and maybe it's by design, right? Maybe it's just, let me get a hot take out there so I can get some interaction on Twitter. I don't know what it is, but you hit on a ton of it in your pod earlier, man. What gets you most excited about the draft being in Green Bay and just, you know, kind of, you know, really it's Green Bay, Wisconsin, yes, but it's the whole state of Wisconsin. The Midwest gets an opportunity to showcase what it is they do. And I think Kansas City really showed out. They did a great job. But I don't think it's much different than Kansas City, right? I mean, when you look at the Green Bay area.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited. And you guys know, if you listen to my podcast, I'm not a big going to do stuff guy. I don't really even like going to Packer games quite as much. It's just very stressful and, you know, the timing and all that. But the draft in Green Bay gets me super excited. Just the layout of it in general. It's not such a, you know, you got to be here at this time. And it's kind of like if you took Packers tailgating and you're like, this is it. This is what we're doing all day. We're tailgating all day. And then way over there, they're going to be announcing picks and whatnot, but we're just going to party. We're going to have some good drinks and good food, and we're going to hang out, and it's going to be, and it's not just Packer fans. You got fans from all different fan bases, but it's largely going to be highlighting Green Bay. And I was thinking about today, when the Packers are on the clock, man. Oh my goodness, the cheers and the Go Pack Go chants and just how absolutely wild it's going to be. I'm beyond excited, man. I think it's a fantastic event. I think anyone that doesn't see how it's going to be great, just I guess I don't understand what their perspective on it could even be, because those types of events are what Lambeau's all about. You know, I mean, if you ever been to a game, and I don't just mean in the press box, I'm talking about actually going outside and tailgating. You look at that and you say, this place would be perfect for an NFL draft event, because that's exactly what the NFL draft is going to be.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Like you said, you know, good people, good food, good beer, all the way across. I mean, let's do this. Let's share the screen here. I want to just kind of give people an idea, because it cracked me up. We have one. I don't want to single anybody out, and I'm not going to name any names. You're probably going, please don't, Clayton. I'm not going to. But they talk about, we don't have the infrastructure. We don't have the – like, all of a sudden, they've become these geniuses when it comes to business. And I'm like, if you were a genius at running a business in the way that Mark Murphy has and orchestrating this whole thing, basically busting his freaking rear end the last 2 years to make sure that they have everything in place, really the last 5 years when you think about it, to put everything in place to where you could possibly have – an NFL draft or an event like this. You know, I understand the Super Bowl would be a long shot. I completely get that. I understand. But when you're talking about doing a draft, this sets up perfectly. I just seen an exchange with you and some people on Twitter talking about, what if it snows? What if it does snow?
Yeah, awesome.
Dude, if it snows, then that's Green Bay, Wisconsin, baby.
Right.
And you know, you were talking about other fans, right? I've been to several games at Lambeau, and one of the things I came away with was interacting with other fans, watching them. I came across some Pittsburgh Steelers fans that went to the Cleveland Browns game that I went to at Lambeau Field. So it was the Packers-Browns, right? And then all of a sudden, you get Steelers fans there. And I'm like, why is a pack of Steelers fans? They were like, well, dude, we had to experience it.
Yeah.
And I'm like... That's what Lambeau Field is. That's what Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Well, yeah, and you know, even if you look at the warm weather fans won't like it. Yes, they will, because like you said, it's an experience. When you go to Lambeau, you want to experience Lambeau. If you want nice warm beach, you don't come to Lambeau. You don't come to Green Bay. If you're coming up here, it's because you want to experience the history of it. You want all that comes with it. And if it snows, that's perfect. That's exactly what you want. You want, you're bundled up in your coat. It's snowing. You got brats rolling on the grill. You know, I mean, it's just the whole thing. I mean, I will be disappointed if there isn't a little bit of snow on that day, to be completely honest. And the people who are saying that's a reason why you shouldn't do it, they're so disconnected from
Bingo.
NFL fandom. Like they just don't understand what it means to even, which is shocking to me. But it's like, how do you not understand what it's like? Forget Packer fan, an NFL fan. Because like you said, fans from all over the place, they want to experience those things. So I don't know how they don't get it covering the NFL every single day like they do.
Yeah, it's because they've been coddled. They've been their entire career. It's just been this whole – the media thinks it's all about them, Ryan. That's what it comes down to. You know, yeah. There's one guy that's on – I used to love Good Morning Football. When they launched that show on NFL Network, I was so freaking excited. I was like, this is exactly what I want to start the day. I can't stand to watch it now. You got one guy wants to show videos of him playing a guitar, and it's like, oh, yeah, this is back when I was in a band. Nobody cares that you were in a band, dude. Nobody cares. We care about football. We care about getting the news around the league. We care about those things. We don't give a crap about the fact that you were in a band back in the day. Another dude, he was on a crew team. Oh, he wants everybody to know that he used to row on a crew team. Nobody cares, dude. I could care less. You know, Kyle Brandt thinks he's a freaking comedian. I used to love the dude. Now I'm like, he is so corny, so cheeseball. Yeah,
he's got such a ridiculous shtick. It's just hard to listen to him.
It really, and in the meantime, you got people that are on staff at NFL Network, like Scott Pioli, who's been in the draft room. They've literally been a general manager of a team, and they can't sniff an inch of the camera to get their take on situations.
Right.
And it's because it's just this whole shock factor. And what it comes down to is those guys, man, they've got that whole attitude of, you know, they're born on third base and they act like they hit a freaking triple. they don't respect the game at all. The only thing they value, Ryan, is attention. They just want attention to themselves. They want to forget the game. This is my time to shine. I'm on camera. I've worked my butt off to get to this point, and this is exactly what it's about. Me, 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 me. It drives me freaking insane, dude.
Well, here's the thing that I love about it. They're going to hate it. They're going to hate the draft. We're all going to love it. So they're going to be miserable, and we're going to have the time of our lives, and that is a perfect event, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Could you imagine some of these media members face-to-face with Vince Lombardi, Coach John Madden, Papa Bear Hallis, Curly Lambeau, Tom Landry, Don Shula, Bill Walsh? They would eat their freaking lunch seeing them try to make it about them. But let's talk about – this infrastructure here. First of all, Lambeau Field holds 81,441 people. It's my understanding there were 300,000 at the peak, not at the same time, but overall, I shouldn't say at the peak, in Kansas City, there were 300,000 roughly that showed up for the draft, okay? You got 81,441 capacity at Lambeau Field. They forget that the Resch Center holds 10,000 people. These are people that don't want to, they just want to sit during the draft, right? We're not talking about people just mingling and you know, chilling and just hanging out. The Expo Center, they just finished. A lot of people don't even know the Expo Center is there as in extension to the Resch Center, which it sits right here. So you see the Resch Center is this arena, right? And then you've got the Expo Center here. That Expo Center, from what I understand, is 125,000 square feet. That would probably be HQ for the draft, right? So, you know, they're talking about there's not enough room, there's not enough infrastructure, there's nothing to do. Look at this angle right here, man, as we roll it down. This is Titletown, right? First of all, you got Lambeau Field sitting here. You got your Kohler Lodge down here on your lower left, right? You got Crowles West, which is one of the freaking best. If you want to just put yourself into cardiac arrest with some fast food, that's the joint right there, right? And then, of course, down here you've got Hinterland, which is a really, really cool brewery. I think you had a guy call in on Packernet After Dark the other night, and he was talking about dropping into Hinterland. At each end of the dining hall, there's like two fireplaces, dude. So if it is cold, it's the perfect place to have a beer. It's the perfect place to have some cheese curds. They got the rest of the restaurant there. You've got this whole area here. Arians Hill, I'm sure they'll set the stage up somewhere here. They typically do concerts right here in this little area, this square area. There's another restaurant down here called The Turn that's really, really cool. This is all developing now. You see right here is Titletown Flats, which I won't say the name, but there is a very famous player that lives right there at Titletown Flats. I witnessed that firsthand. This is all Titletown Flats now. And then you got this huge apartment complex that's getting complete. Look at you got kind of this natural amphitheater kind of set up to where they can do outdoor activities there. All this office space. There's a ton of freaking room just in and around Lambeau Field to do this. And they're making it sound as if it's sitting up there in the middle of a cornfield and there's nothing to, it's like, what are you talking about? And think about this, Ryan. I want your take on this. Imagine this neighborhood right here, right? The neighborhood that surrounds Lambeau Field. That is going to be one big 1950s style freaking block party is what it's going to be.
100%.
Every bit of this will.
Yep.
And
yeah, you couldn't run fast enough, far enough to get away from the party. You spend all day running, you're still in the party.
Yep. And then if you go down Oneida Street, right? And you go and you creep down in this area, this is all businesses here. First of all, this is kind of Sports Bar Row over here. And for those of you on the pod, I apologize. I'm just assuming everybody can see this, but just all of this is going to be one big freaking party. Well, they don't want to, you know, they don't want to hang out at the draft all day. You got the family, take them down here to the mall. Right.
Yeah.
You got a huge mall down here. There's a ton of stuff you can do. And that's what a lot of people don't even understand about Green Bay. I mean, you've got things galore. Like, you know, you got the Botanical Garden. You know, Mandy and I, we went to that. That was freaking awesome. Awesome experience there. If you're an outdoorsy type person, you got, you know, several brewing companies are there. You got the Automobile Gallery. If you're a car guy, you got muscle cars, classic cars, futuristic stuff, really cool museum there. You got the Bay Beach Amusement Park. I think you said you took the kids there at one point. Like, so you've got an amusement park right there in the city. And this is, you know, they're talking about there's nothing to do. A National Railroad Museum, the new zoo, Big Adventure Park, the Bay Beach Wildlife Sanctuary. You got the historic Meyer Theater from that was literally built, been in use since the 1930s. Like, I don't mean to sound like an a-hole here, but somebody has got to speak up because these are people that cover the Packers too. It isn't just the national media. It's like, why are you trying to beat down the very thing that you work for? Like, I would never understand that. I'll never understand it.
Yeah. And I'm beating the same drum over and over again, but the only people that wouldn't enjoy this are the people that they don't want to go to Botanical Gardens. They don't want to go to some theme park with their kids. They want to rub elbows with GMs and coaches somewhere at some high end thing. They want to see all the big wigs, people that don't want to be anywhere near them, by the way. Nobody wants to have media members rubbing shoulders with them, but they're going to push their way in anyways. They're going to spend ESPN's money on a steak dinner that they can't personally afford because they don't make any money themselves, just so that they can walk around and act super important and all this stuff. It's a big show. It's a big ego trip for them. And they're mad because this is a big vacation for them. This is a big, long vacation in Vegas or L.A. or any of these places they'd love to go. They don't want to go to Green Bay. Now, again, blue collar NFL fans will love this. It's going to be a great experience, and they can piss and moan all they want about this, and they probably will be miserable. Good. Go away. You go as far away as you can to find whatever restaurant you need to stroke your ego. Go in Milwaukee. Go to some nice restaurant in Milwaukee. We're all going to be out on the street in Green Bay smoking burgers and everything else and just having a good old time and enjoying what the Packers have set up for us to enjoy for the day, and it's going to be fantastic.
I thought you were going to say smoking something else. I was like, is that legal?
No. That's a different state. You're thinking somewhere else.
That's down in Illinois, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, Andy in the chat says, Lambeau Field in the cold. Oh, no. Don't let your tears freeze to your face. I'm digging that energy. Right. And then he also come back and said, cribbage boards, summer sausage, cheese platters on all the tables in the green room. Do it up Wisconsin style, man. I love it. You know, you were talking about fancy restaurants. That's what's hilarious. You've heard people say, oh, there's nothing to do there. There's no – dude, Hotel Northland, the Walnut Room.
Oh, yeah.
Took Mandy in there. Dude, they about threw me out on my head. They don't want a redneck in that joint. It's too classy. Republic Chop House, I was actually eating in there. We went there for dinner, I think, on Saturday night. A freaking G2 pulls up, a G2 Benz, like $150,000, $200,000 vehicle rolls up. I shouldn't have said the vehicle. I don't know why I said that. A player got it because now I want to say the player.
Right, the player and
his wife got out, came and ate in the restaurant. A few minutes later, Jaron Reed rolls up. He goes in the back where they're at. And it's like, so these restaurants are good enough for the players, multimillionaire players, but it's not good enough for insert name reporter who thinks his crap don't stay.
For some newspaper reporter making $65,000 a year who thinks he's a multimillionaire big shot.
It cracks me up. The Rivers Bend. You know, Chef Fusion, you got Prime Quarter Steakhouse. There's a ton. And then remove all that, right? Let's go to the normal folks like us. You know, what are the dives that we would be looking at? You know, a single Ryan Schlipp, a single Clay Bailey. We're just kind of hanging out enjoying the draft all weekend long, right? You got Louis Lagoon right on the water. You got Hegemeister Park, which I mentioned earlier. That's a restaurant that's basically named after the very first field that the Packers played on in Hegemeister Park before it was relocated. Anduzzi Sports Club, world-renowned, D2 Sports Club, TNT, Tundra, Poly G's is one of those. It's just a hole-in-the-wall, freaking awesome place. Stadium View is really, really popular. We mentioned Hinterland, Tavern in the Sky, which overlooks Lambeau parking lot. The Turn, that's a sports bar. They got Top Golf, VR, all that stuff in there. Things where you can just kill all day long if you, while the draft's going on, you just, hey, it's the third round, fourth round. Hey, let's just go over here and kill some time. The bar on Holmgren Way, 1919 Kitchen and Tap at the top of Lambeau Field. There is a freaking ton of stuff. And these idiots, their ego is too much in the way to even realize how awesome this event could be. And not only that, it can be a stepping stone to future events. It's great.
Yeah, and you got certain people saying, I've been there before. No, you haven't been there before. I've been there, but I haven't been there. Everything you're listing is getting me excited because I've never heard of these places. I don't know anything about it. I haven't experienced it the way, and I've experienced it more than a lot of these guys, because again, what do? They get their hotel rooms, then they go to the stadium, they go right up to the press box, and they sit in there, and then they leave and maybe go get some food or something and go somewhere. They're not out there tailgating with everybody and having a good time with everybody. So yeah, they maybe have been there, but they haven't been there in so far as they've experienced what everything Green Bay has to offer.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because when we were doing we got a private stadium tour this year with a couple of guys. One guy has been doing stadium tours and Title Town District tours, but Old Town Green Bay tours, talking about and showing you where the original, you know, Vince Lombardi's office was downtown before they, you know, had the offices moved to 1265 Lombardi. Obviously, it wasn't named Lombardi at the time. But we're up there, and they had a ton of paper sacks, right? And they were like, I was like, what is that? And they said, that's the media's lunch for the game tomorrow. And I'm like, they cater to these people like they're little kindergarten, and they're still freaking complaining. Still complaining.
Well, yeah, they're gonna roll out the red carpet for these guys, but that's still not gonna be good enough, no matter what. And I've even heard them, and it was becoming a bash fest, but now that you mentioned that, I have heard people complain, the media members complain about what type of food is served up in the media rooms. Like some places they love it because of the kind of, you know, they've got the real good, like the great pretzels and the donuts and the pizza. And some places they only give you like hot dogs. And it's like, you shut your stupid mouth. There's people down there right now spending $10 on a freaking beverage, and you're getting free food in a press box, and you're complaining about it. You're living everybody's dream, and you're whining. Nobody wants to hear it, and nobody cares.
And the only reason you have a job is because fans are willing to show up and support this sport that you take every freaking chance to bash. And you got somebody down in the bowl that spent their last dollar to get into that bowl, right? And they might have packed a freaking lunch and ate in the car before they came in the stadium because they couldn't afford the stadium food, right? Yeah. Those are the blue collar people that we're talking about that make this whole thing go. That's how pro football started. Pro football was, I don't want to get on a history segment here, but it was so, like, college football was so much more popular than pro football, and it took forever for pro football to catch up because it was just for love of the freaking game is all it was, really. Street King here in the chat says, I've already started planning a trip to the draft at Lambeau Field. Same here, man. I was calling around earlier today and just trying to get Ryan, I'm trying to get the inside information of how is this going to unfold? When are the hotel rooms going to release that type of thing for sure?
Right.
Here we go. Street King said, yeah, Good Morning Football is awful and their commentary is ludicrous. Nothing but shills. I don't know what that means, but that's I'm sure that's not good. Here we got Thomas Austin in the chat. Says, Lambo, baby. I almost wore my Thomas Austin shirt for this, man, but it's pretty – nothing against Thomas, but – to see another man's face on my chest is really, really, really
jarring.
Exactly. But Lambo, baby, go Pack, go. Love it. Good stuff, man. And appreciate your donation there, Daryl, in the chat. Obviously, donating to a great cause there. We're Fertile Ground Ranch Discipleship Ministry. So let's do this, man. We're done ranting. We're done talking about it. I want to kind of get all that off my chest because I heard your rant earlier and I've kind of stayed quiet. And I'm like, you know what, man, they're all acting as if there's nothing to do. Let's just lay out a few things, guys. That was just a few things that I've experienced in Green Bay, right? That I just jotted down like, okay, I remember going here a few years back, there a few years back. And really what makes Green Bay the experience in Green Bay is the people. You're not going to find an area that's more diverse. And, you know, I know you see a lot of diversity within, you know, big cities, and I get all that. But when you go up there, man, I'm telling you, as we were taking Uber drivers, I met people from all over the freaking world that moved to Green Bay, which is really, really cool because when that city was first, kind of settled, you had nothing but immigrants from all over the world kind of settling in there on the Great Lake, knowing that bay was going to be a freaking gold mine as far as business and opportunity, jobs, stuff like that. So just a really cool place, man. It's a special place in my heart. I know that. So let's do this, man. Let's talk roster real quick. I was listening to some of the camp updates, the OTA updates you were giving. You laid it out perfectly, man. There was all kinds of good nuggets in there. One of the things that stood out to me, and I mentioned it to you offline here, was the defensive line room. You know, you were talking about JJ, I think, had mentioned to you that someone had beefed up. Let's hit on that real quick for our listeners. You know, the defensive line room, I think you kind of came to the same realization that I did when I looked at the board back here behind me. I looked at the defensive line room. I'm like, man, there ain't a whole lot of bodies there, right? So it sounds like that, the way that they've got Wooden beefing up a bit, he'll probably be listed as a defensive lineman and play a role there. Maybe even whether it's in an emergency role, I don't know. I was kind of expecting him to be an edge defender, but it sounds like he might play a little interior, don't you think?
Yeah, that was my expectation too. And I think even the first time I talked about it, as I was going through it, I was like, man, we got a lot of edge rushers and not a lot of defensive tackles. And I understood the value of, you know, occasionally putting Lucas Van Ness in there and Colby, and Carl Brooks makes the most sense, but he's also an edge rusher. And but yeah, as I was looking at him, like, we don't have, you know, if you assume our starters are Kenny, Slayton, and Wyatt, who do we have after that? Like, Jonathan Ford is a seventh round nose tackle. I don't know if I no offense, I hope he does a great career. I don't really want him on the field, to be honest. So who do we have to lean on? So yeah, when I heard Colby was already up to like 285, and then when we got the updates at OTAs that he was getting snaps with the ones at defensive tackle, and then we assume again Carl Brooks around 300 pounds is probably going to be a defensive tackle, and then again, you know, Lucas Van Ness will take a couple snaps in there, I'm feeling a little bit better about that room in general. But I do think that's necessary to make sure that those guys are interior guys, because that's where the biggest need is, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that when I was looking at that, I'm kind of like, I want to see a ton of Devontae Wyatt, man. I've got to see Devontae Wyatt this year. And I think they see it. I think, I was going back watching some of the late season tape there a couple of days ago, and it's like, man, every time he's on the field, you see it. You see the flashes. You see the athleticism. You see that he belongs in the NFL. One of the other things that you were talking about with your camp updates there, Luke Musgrave, he seemed to seem to pop up quite a bit, right?
Yeah.
Are you, I know both of us, me personally, I wasn't crazy high on Luke Musgrave.
Right.
My board, however, was, right? And that's what I was talking about on our live draft broadcast was like, man, Luke Musgrave is hands down the better tight end here, according to my board, which is comprised of people that, you know, that I put a lot of stock in their information. Are you starting to come around a little bit more on Luke? How are you seeing Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft?
So part of it is me getting overhyped on one practice of OTAs that that's public, but just the way that he shot to the top, you know, because you never know how these things are going to go, and didn't really hear a ton from Jaden Reed or really anybody else, but you know, Luke Musgrave getting first reps with the ones at tight end, like that shocked me. Now, when they actually did 11 on 11s, it was DeGuara, but still, like that first time out there when they're with the ones, it's Musgrave. That kind of surprised me. I didn't expect that. So it put something in the back of my head. They're really high on this guy, you know, above and beyond Tucker. I didn't hear anything about Tucker Kraft. I don't think the entire OTAs really, not that it's a negative, but again, it's just kind of gets the mind going a little bit. And then, yeah, it's Musgrave hit across the middle. Like, oh, dang. Okay. You know, that his first completion, I think, was to Musgrave. So now there seems to be that rapport and now you're starting to see it. And, you know, Darnell Savage is trailing and whatnot, which you could just bash on Savage, but still it's like, that's the point, right? You beat those safeties with that speed and with his physicality and all that kind of stuff. And it just seems like it's starting to come together. Like it's going to be potentially a pretty good connection between Jordan Love and Jaden Reed. I said that wrong. And Musgrave, just insofar as executing something that the defense is having a hard time covering. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The defense was really on fire. It sounds like in OTAs, but the one thing that I don't know that they necessarily had an answer for was Musgrave. And that's kind of the whole point of getting those guys in here. We all have smartphones and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
5-1-0, declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you talk about during the 11 on 11s, DeGuara was out there, but, you know, right off the bat, you had Musgrave in. It kind of goes hand in hand with what you talked about on your pod, how, you know, Matt LaFleur is really trying to put a lot of stress on these young guys early, right? And it makes me wonder if it was just, all right, yeah, DeGuara's the one, and then it's go time. Get out there, you know,
right?
I mean?
Yeah, no, it absolutely could be. And again, that's the whole point, is just seeing how they respond. I mean, you know, you're doing warm ups, your stretches, and whatever, and you've gone through the book and you think you know, and then all of a sudden it's like, all right, go. It's like, oh, you know, it is a little jarring and see how they, but again, how did he respond? It sounded like he responded really well. So that's another sign that, another positive note. Yes, I understand for the 1,000th time that it's just the first time in OTAs. You got to say it because somebody didn't hear me the first 7 times and they're going to roast me about it. But even still, I mean, it's good to hear those things because it doesn't have to be that way. You know, that there are negative notes that come out. I mean, we heard a bunch for Jordan and a bunch for some other guys, as far as things just not going well. The offensive line was having a real hard time blocking. There are such things as negative notes. And so if you get a bunch of positives about a guy that's never taken snaps with the offense, that's at least going to go in the back of my mind as something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. And here in the chat, and then we're going to bounce around with the chat, guys. I promise we'll talk about what you're asking with your comments. Since we're on Musgrave, this is Daryl here. Daryl Uter says, Musgrave, a fantasy sleeper for tight end. I could see it. It depends on, like we were talking about, you know, does he finish as the one? And when it comes to DeGuara, the thing that's going to benefit Musgrave, if they do continue to use DeGuara as more of that H-back role, that guy that's going to be in the backfield a little bit, whether they continue to run that quote-unquote pony package with a tight end in, you know, that split set in the back, which that's what it evolved into with some of A.J. Dillon's, you know, a little bit of struggling there with pass protection last year. If he does become the number one attached tight end, absolutely. You know, that's the thing that you really need in this offense for it to go. Now, with Aaron here and him doing a lot of checks at the line, a lot of RPO action, things like that, you didn't get to see as many of those crossing routes from the tight ends, right? You've seen a couple of long wheels and things like that, which is funny that when I watched the tape of Luke Musgrave in college, what I came away with was he has the athleticism to run those two.
He would have been the guy for that, yeah.
That would have been perfect. Yeah. And here we are, one of the first plays that he has in camp. What was it? It was a crosser, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, that really does begin to add up there. So I'm excited, man, to see what he does for sure. Also here in the chat, this is John Dorn says, what do y'all think on Wicks? I don't know a whole lot about Wicks, but I do know that first, one of the first plays that came across the wire was a bomb to him. Am I thinking right? That Jordan was at 55 yards or something?
I think there was a big one from Jordan. And then later with the twos, he ended up catching a big touchdown reception, I think, from who was our number two here? It was Etling, I think it was.
Yeah, right. And they do have Etling right now as the number two over Sean Clifford, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So that's interesting there because I really see Clifford being I think he's kind of a shoe-in for that backup role because you don't want to lose that rookie contract, obviously. You know, you drafted him for a reason. You don't want to waste a pick. But with Etling, it's like if you march Etling out there as the number two, then Clifford gets the perfect opportunity to see what he needs to be and do to be that backup because I think that's something that really goes underappreciated by some fan bases. Is just how important that backup role is. You know, people look at it as, oh, he's got to come in and win the game if the starting QB goes down. Yeah, right. Absolutely. But the top priority is he's like that personal assistant to the starter, you know?
Right.
And when you see Danny Etling has been around for a couple years now, and him and Jordan Love have developed this chemistry as far as, you know, teammates. And I would say if you ask Jordan Love, who would you rather have as your backup, it's probably Danny Etling just because they're familiar with each other. But with Sean Clifford, man, I don't know, he just seems like he has a really good spirit about him. I'm excited to see what he can do for the Packers for sure. Let's talk about Jaden Reed a minute, man. You mentioned him just a second ago. I wasn't as excited about Christian Watson last year as I am about Jaden Reed this year.
It's agreed. Like, same.
The more I dig into it, the more I go back to that All-American season and Mike Wall pointing that out to me on my pod when we had him on. I don't know, dude. Jaden Reed, when you watch him from 2021, that dude, he's fearless. He's natural. He's fluid. Everything about him and his transition from he's a great hands catcher, by the way, which is an awesome thing. His transition from hands catch to turn it upfield is pretty remarkable, man. How are you feeling about Jaden so far?
It was funny. It just kind of occurred to me that the comparisons between, for example, Rashawn and Christian Watson and then Lucas Van Ness and Jaden Reed are very similar to me in terms of, I think Christian and Rashawn, you looked at and said, you kind of worry that it's going to take them some time to develop. Whereas with Lucas Van Ness and Jaden Reed, it's like, I think they can come in and play right away. They seem much more well-rounded, the amount of things that they can do. It's not like, well, we got to develop this whole route tree and everything else. No, I think he can pretty well do it. Great catcher, great after the catch. Really good route runner just in general in terms of his shiftiness and all that kind of stuff and setting up defenders and all that. You know, with Christian, it just felt like projection in terms of his ceiling. You know, I mean, he's really fast, and if you can develop the rest of his game, he's going to be really good, which obviously I'm excited about him at this point. But with Jaden, it's like I would almost be surprised if he didn't come in with, you know, of course, some growing pains, but if he doesn't come in right away and play at a relatively high level. I mean, I'll put it this way. I wouldn't be surprised if he comes in and is a better version of Romeo Doubs kind of right out of the gate in terms of he's faster than Romeo. I think he's a better route runner than Romeo. He's got better hands than Romeo. I think he's better after the catch than Romeo. He doesn't know the offense as well and might not get as many opportunities, but I would personally be a little surprised if he didn't kind of overtake him in that role. And now when there's three out there, I see him in the slot, but I really think if you got two wide receivers, I think your best two are going to be Christian and Jaden Reed, and I think it'll happen pretty quick.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, the thought of Romeo Doubs being, you know, that third guy.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen he can play at the NFL level. I wasn't as impressed with him as others. But from a realistic standpoint, like him being all of a sudden you make a draft pick in Jaden Reed and Romeo Doubs, who played pretty well last year as a rookie, learning the system, all that things, battling through the drops. And like you had talked about on your pod, and him, you know, fighting with the jugs machine after practice. And he's just one of those guys that wants to, you know. Yep. Now all of a sudden he's the number three. It makes you feel a lot better about that wide receiver room. Not that we're going to come out here and we're putting unrealistic expectations on either. Like you had said on a previous pod before too, like, let's stop trying to throw stats out there. Like, I think right. If so-and-so has this much, then that'll be a successful year. No, let's come out and compete this year. Let's see what we have. Let's see what these young people can do. And if we look up at the end of the season and we've got 10 wins, then that's awesome. You got a good foundation in place. But to go in trying to expect it, all right, well, if he doesn't have 1,000 yards receiving, then that's a bad year. I think that's just silly. Kind of setting yourself up for failure. With Jaden Reed, though, if I understood correctly, you correct me if I'm wrong, he was the number one punt returner. Is that right?
He's very good. Yeah, I know that much. He's very good at it.
Because it sounded like they marched him out as the one, if I heard correctly.
Oh, in OTAs, yeah. He got first reps at it, yep.
Yeah, gotcha. I'm excited to see that, too, because, you know, a lot of people were going, don't take Keyshawn Nixon off of that. Listen, Keyshawn Nixon is a great returner, right? It's obvious he really excelled at kick return, but he's going to have to get a spell every now and again, man. That dude's going to be playing slot. And I think it was it Cassidy Hill that you said tweeted out, Keyshawn Nixon is everywhere, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think that dude's going to be the spark plug for this team. I really do, man. I was so glad they brought him back. Just really freaking awesome. Professor Cakes here. I always giggle at that freaking name. I don't know why. Professor Cakes says, Jaden Reed comp Tariq Hill. Hey, sign me up, man. I know this. When you see his quick twitch, I'm not going to lie, Ryan. That's the first person that came to mind for me was Tariq Hill. And I'm not trying to say he's as fast as Tariq Hill, but just the way he moves, his fluidity in and out of the breaks, making the catch, not losing any momentum, it kind of reminds you of him. And you know, that's the thing too. A lot of people are listening to him as a slot. They're saying, oh, that'll be the slot receiver. That'll be the slot receiver. Dude, he could play everywhere. He played everywhere. He played X. He played Z. He played slot. He was in the backfield a couple times. I've seen a couple of jet motions, and it's like, oh yeah, this is the guy we need as far as, you know, kind of ushering in that new role there within Matt LaFleur's system. John Dorn here says, Torre, meaning Samori Torre, will turn heads this preseason. I think so too. I mean, we've heard positive things about him. You know, like you pointed out too, though, Ryan, every time we get a draft pick after the fourth round, if they do anything, we get excited, right? Yeah. And it's funny, we're all holding out hope. And I heard somebody on Packernet After Dark, and I laughed because I did the same thing. I'm like, Donald Driver did it. But what do you think about Torre, man? He does seem to get a lot of praise from the coaching staff, right? Uh-oh, we may have lost Ryan there.
I like Torre on what they could potentially be. I think we always we do this every year, you know, and it's always somebody else. We remember maybe a little more glowingly than what actually happened, as far as, you know, it happens to me too. I'll go over to PFF and I'm like, that's it? I thought he had way more yards. I thought he had like a couple touchdowns. I thought he had like a 75 PFF grade. It was like a 40 or something great. You know, you kind of build stuff up in our brain. I think we all do that, especially as fans. We really like somebody, and especially in the off season, like, we just keep adding a couple yards every week that goes by as far as what they did. But I mean, look, it's a crowded room. That's for sure. I mean, you mentioned Wicks earlier as a possibility. You got DeBose in the building now, so there's a lot of guys competing. I think it's going to be tough for Ture, but I'll be excited if he can just come in and be that contributor. We've had a ton of guys, you know, guys like I mentioned, Geronimo Allison. Geronimo was not Devontae, but I love that Geronimo was on the team while he was here. He was a role player. He had a specific role. He did a good job for us, and I think Ture can be that guy. I just, you know, like with other things, I want to kind of not set the expectation too high and thinking that Ture, you know, he's going to be this special kind of maybe like, it's Donald Driver. It happens. It can happen. You know, an undrafted free agent can do it. Obviously a seventh round pick can do it. And, but I think if we were to set a little bit more realistic expectations, especially with the amount of investment we've had, not even just the wide receivers that we've invested in, the tight ends that we've got and the running backs that we've got, we got to lower our expectations for where Ture is going to be able to contribute. If he cracks 500 yards, I'm going to be beyond stunned and excited, or possibly scared that there were a lot of injuries or something went really wrong. Because I don't know how he finds 500 yards in this offense.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. You know, the safety position, that's one that's interesting to me. I've heard a lot of people say, you know, Anthony Johnson, that they were so surprised he waited, that he stayed, you know, hung around that long in the draft, and they wouldn't be surprised if he's playing, you know, or competing for a starting role at safety. The safety room is very, very interesting to me. If Keyshawn Nixon is indeed the slot corner, right, and you've got Darnell Savage as the backup slot corner, is he going to start at safety? I mean, you're not going to have him on the roster sitting on the bench at $8 million, right, or $7.9, whatever it is. It's hard to believe that's the plan. But Rudy Ford, if Rudy Ford gets bumped out of the starting lineup somehow, Ryan, you're going to hear a loud noise from the state of Tennessee down there. I'm going to be so mad, bro. But if you do line up Rudy Ford and Darnell Savage, you're hearing a lot of people singing praise about Anthony Johnson. Again, we got to curb the enthusiasm. You went out and got Tarvarius Moore. Then you got Jonathan Owens. It sounded like Tarvarius Moore, if I understood you correctly on your pod. He was out there with the ones. Am I thinking right?
I think he was at one point or another, and that may have had to do with maybe somebody not being out at the time. I'm not sure. I know it was Ford and Savage for most of it. He may have taken some snaps of the ones at some point.
Gotcha. So it wasn't like highly reported or anything. Okay, that's right. Good information there. All right, cool. Here in the chat, we've got Phil Jones says, hoping Torre doesn't pan out like Winfrey. Yeah, good point there. As far as kicker too, and you know it's OTAs when we're talking kickers. Yeah. Anders Carlson is fascinating to me too, because it's like, Ryan, I don't see it. I went back and looked at the stats. I looked at there's really not much to look at on tape other than, you know, how far inside the inside the uprights was he. You know, you can really take that into consideration to determine a great kicker as well, just how accurate the accuracy is. But the fact that they're moving forward with him, right? He's the kicker. It sounds like he's going to be our field goal.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's especially when you draft a guy. I mean, I know it's just the sixth round, but I can't imagine him just not winning the job, you know, and then just throwing away a sixth round pick like that. I think he's officially the guy, and they're going to see if they can develop him into whatever. But I'm with you. I mean, it's a big deal to just kind of burn the boats and say, okay, this is our guy, especially, you know, like you said, I understand the connection to our special teams coordinator, and that's great, but the stats are not super exciting. I mean, I would borderline say they're kind of bad a little bit, and I'm not super excited about it. But, you know, I mean, guys that get paid a lot of money to make these decisions feel like he can be the guy, and hopefully he can, because I feel like we got something special going with special teams, and it sure would be a real big problem if our kicker was kind of the thing slowing us down, you know, as far as reversing what we've built with that special teams unit.
Yeah, and, you know, what it comes down to, too, is Rich Bisaccia, special teams coordinator, has had his hands in every freaking move that's surrounded the special teams, and you've seen it, how much it improved last year. He's the one who went, met with Anders. Obviously, he worked with Anders' brother, years ago, and he handpicked Anders Carlson as the next kicker.
Right.
Dude, I'm sitting here going, Clay, you need to shut up and just trust. Right. Rich knows what he's doing.
So. Well, I'll tell you what, if you would have said either Anders Carlson is going to be a good kicker or Keyshawn Nixon is going to be the number one kick returner in football, it would have been such an easy decision that it's Anders Carlson, because I'm like, Keyshawn doesn't even return kicks. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I think he's a gunner or something. Like, he doesn't do that, and he's slow, and like, you're an idiot if you think that guy's going to ever be anything. And here we go. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think he should have at this point earned our trust. And as scary as it is, and it's worth talking about, it's way too early to be trashing a decision that guy has made, considering the strides he's made with our special teams unit.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk injuries before we get out of here. And I know it's early, and nobody wants to hear the word injury. But obviously, Rashawn Gary, seeing him tweeting some stuff out, man, he looks good. He looks like he's tracking. If he comes back a week one, Ryan, I will lose my mind. I don't know how he can do that, right? Am I wrong? Am I being too pessimistic going, oh, there's no way?
I'm trying not to get myself there. But, yeah, I mean, it's same with Stokes. I mean, it's like they had serious injuries. You shouldn't expect them back till later. And then you watch the videos. I saw Stokes, like, doing that handshake, and he's jumping up and down. And I'm like, it's not what I was expecting from him. I thought he was going to at least have like a knee brace or something. But yeah, Gary and Stokes seem fine. And I know it was early on. I think that the head coach or the GM or whatever saying that Rashawn was on track for week one. And it's like, yeah, I know, but you said that about everybody. So I'm trying to kind of tamp it down in my brain because I did that with Bakhtiari. Like he could be week one, yep. And we didn't see him basically all year. So then, but we'll see, man. I'm not expecting him week one, but that is going to be such a huge thing. I saw somebody tweet out recently that the Packers are averaging, the defense is averaging like 31 points given up in week one. Like we're just getting eviscerated week one. So if we can get Rashawn out there and Van Ness and Preston and like the whole crew and just everybody fired up and ready to go, I think that would be fantastic, especially since we're not going up against a very good offense. I will throw that in there.
That always helps, right? It's going to be so fun, man. That first week, and that's what, a 4:30 game, my time, 3:30 your all's time. That's going to be great, man. In Chicago, let's go ahead and get that ownership transaction transfer from Aaron Rodgers to Jordan Love, right? Get that in the books. Quay is another one that kind of worried me a little bit. It sounded like he had an injury the other day. I was just going through Twitter while you were talking. I couldn't find any updates. Of course, they're gonna limit a ton of information. Like right. That you're not gonna get hardly anything. Have you heard anything at all on Quay? What that might have been?
No, even in real time, I wasn't sure what was going on. They're talking about Quay was standing off and like kind of mirroring what the defense was doing. I'm like, why? What? I don't know what that means. And it seemed like even the media kind of didn't figure it out until later when they started all kind of reporting, oh, it looks like he's limping. So I don't know if we got official word other than he wasn't participating really and seemed to have some kind of a noticeable limp. But I'm guessing the next time that the coaches or whatever get in front of the media, that question will come up for sure.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I see the tweet I think you were referring to. This is from Kyle Malzahn, I think, said, not sure what's going on with Quay Walker. He was moving slowly and limping a bit. Don't want to speculate. Could be nothing. He was doing some drills earlier and then went to the side. We'll see if we can find out during the pressers. So probably need to comb through the pressers to see exactly what that was about. Somebody said he was kind of bent over at one point too. You know, like I don't know if he was favoring his abdomen, if it was lower body or what. But, yeah, hopefully everything's good there. But – again, man, it's OTAs. Everything's going to be kind of we're all going to be reaching for something every little bit. Somebody stubs a toe, we're going to be like, what happened? You know, just the way it is. But anything else you want to add before we wrap this big bear up? I really appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm pretty optimistic right now. I like the way things are looking up. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of question marks and there are some holes here and there, but we've got some talent on this team and we'll see kind of how much that shakes out and who wins some of the like offensive line position battles with Zach Tom and whatnot. But man, I tell you what, Romeo and Christian and Jaden and Musgrave, along with, you know, on the defense, you got Rashawn and Lucas and Carl Brooks and Wooden and Wyatt going into year two. And I don't know, man. I mean, I understand the people being kind of skeptical about the Packers, but at the same time, I'm seeing a pretty scary looking team. If they don't hit their potential this year within the next couple of years, yeah. I don't see any reason why this can't be one of the top teams in football.
I agree, man. And when you look at it across the board, I was looking at each position group and I'm like, you know, with the exception of quarterback, which we would all agree we don't know yet.
Right.
And maybe wide receiver simply because, you know, Lazard and Cobb, their departure, I don't know if Jaden Reed's going to be as good as they were, right? And that's really the big addition at the wide receiver room. You look across the board and you go, this team's a little better. I think this team's a little better than they were last year. It kind of feels like that. And I didn't feel like that a month ago. But as I look at it now on paper and I'm like, you know what? If Christian Watson continues to build off what he did last year, if Romeo Doubs takes a step, if Jaden Reed, he lives up to the hype that we're seeing, these tight ends, it's obvious that we have more athleticism at the tight end position now. You know, Bob Tonyan still wasn't fully recovered from that ACL. Mercedes Lewis obviously is not someone who's going to run those crossers or those long wheel routes that we were talking about that Luke Musgrave's showing. Tucker Kraft is just a freaking beast of a man. I don't know, dude. I'm getting excited. I ain't gonna lie, man. And I just want to, like we said last time, I just want to kind of hide in the weeds and not, you know, try right. to. I want it to surprise people if they do come out.
Right.
But again. You know, like I said, I try not to talk wins, loss totals, you know, things like that. But if you tell me, if we fast forward to the end of the season, you go, you know what, We won 7 games, and we know what we have, you know, with this roster. Let's continue to build on it. I would say that's a good season. You know, if we come out and we win 10 games, I'm going to be over the freaking moon, because when you look at that wide receiver cap hit room, I mean, my God, they have nothing. I think we get the least amount of money spent on wide receivers, right, where the rest of the league is just overspending like crazy on the market. Same thing with the tight ends. Think about the tight ends, how cheap that is. You know, your cap room, the Aaron Rodgers cap hit will be off the books next year. And granted, we've got some other things we got to clean up. But if Bakhtiari is not here next year and they don't push more money out, you're going to free up $20 million there. Like, there's a ton of things that could happen. Oh, yeah. I want to say this about Jordan Love's contract extension. If Packer fans don't understand, or they haven't taken the time to really think about what was that contract extension, if that says anything about Jordan Love, he wants to be a Green Bay Packer. He wants to be here. That guy could have held their feet to the fire, got the fifth-year option, and, you know, guaranteed whatever it was, $20 million. But instead, in my opinion, he did the Packers a little bit of a favor. And it's not like this, you know, drastic favor. But if I was in his shoes and the only thing that mattered to me was money, I believe I would have said, no, I want the fifth-year option. I want a chance to hit free agency or get a franchise tag. Instead, he said, yeah, put a little money in my pocket right now. That'll make it very cap-friendly for the next 2 years. And let's take a two-year window and see if this is a fit for both of us, man. I think it says a lot about Jordan Love. I'm really excited to see what he does. So
yeah, and that makes sense too. I mean, it, you know, when we assess this, and then you come to the negotiating table with Jordan Love and say, look, we're going to assess what we have. Next year, we're probably going to have a bunch of money. And if you accept this deal, we're going to have even more. And we're going to use that money to build around you. If we're missing an offensive lineman, if we need this, if we need that, we're going to go out and get it for you. So, I mean, if that's the case, it's not that hard. And I know people want to nickel and dime. And, well, he could have gotten a little bit more here or there. We're talking about putting a bunch of money in your pocket that you didn't have before that could essentially set you up for life. And you're doing the team a favor so that they can build around you next year. I mean, come on, man. I mean, if you want to nickel and dime this thing to where maybe you could have got a couple million here or there more, I think you're missing some of the bigger picture just for simply, I want to maximize the absolute, you know, dollars that I could get, which I understand some people think that way and that's fine. But I think this is a better approach to team building and having a good locker room and having a good relationship and environment and all that kind of stuff. And again, getting your quarterback paid. I think him having money this year is important.
Yeah, absolutely. Him walking into the locker room and people going, hey, they believe he's the guy. They invested in him, right? They didn't just say, hey, well, let's give it a year and see what happens. I think that's important for culture within the locker room too. You know, when it comes to the quarterback contracts across the league, it's kind of broken down into two camps. You've got the Aaron Rodgers, Kirk Cousins, Lamar Jackson type approach where it's give me all the guaranteed shorter contract. That way I control my destiny. And then you've got the Patrick Mahomes, the Josh Allen, and what's rumored to be the Joe Burrow type contract where, hey, sign me to 7 or 10 years. It's very team friendly in a sense of we can maneuver this cap all around. And it's not about me just getting guaranteed money right now. If you had to put Jordan Love into one of those camps, I think it would be the Pat Mahomes, the Josh Allen camp. Like, hey, he's wanting to play ball. He wants to have a good team around him. He really wants to play the cash over cap game with the team and make sure he's got the best possible, you know, team on the field with him. I'm excited about that, man. He's impressed the heck out of me, dude. I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised with him this year. There's going to be struggles. There's no doubt about that. But how he handles those struggles, I go back and watch that Kansas City game. I know the stat line wasn't crazy. But like you mentioned on your pod, it was actually your pod that provoked me to go watch it again today. And it's like, man, they blitzed the crap out of him. And Matt LaFleur's game plan was literally playing to not lose the game. And I'm not trying to bash the coach. I don't pretend to know more than him. But you could tell that was the approach. And it was – he stood in there and took hit after hit after hit and stayed poised, thrust into that situation where he had, what, 2 or 3 days to prepare with Aaron going out with COVID. And it's like every – no one can point to anything with Jordan Love and go, see, that's why I think he's going to be a bust. If anything, man, he's got a good head on his shoulders. He handled pressure well. He came in against arguably the second best football team in the entire National Football League last year in the Philadelphia Eagles, and he didn't back down. And he had people like Big Play Slay saying, hey, that boy looked like Aaron out there throwing.
Right.
And that's what he said, not me.
Yeah.
you know.
And again, he even dispelled some myths too. People are like, well, that the game was over, they had given up or whatever. That's not what Slay said. Slay said they were licking their chops saying, oh, we got the young guy coming in, we're gonna go get him. And then after a little while, they're like, all right, this is not what we thought was gonna happen when he came on the field. So, you know, and again, that is our hope as Packer fans that the rest of the league experiences, right? Everybody expects they're licking their chops, this guy's gonna fail and it's gonna be great. And here go the and we're hoping for that moment where everybody takes a step back and goes, okay, this is not what we thought. This is something a little bit more serious. So but if nothing else, I mean, he seems to be a great guy, great human being. And I hope that we have our quarterback in Jordan Love and don't have to continue searching. If we have to, we have to. We got a great roster to plop a quarterback in if that ends up being the case. But yeah, I'm ready for it to be Jordan Love. I think it would be a great quarterback of the future if it can be that.
Absolutely. Everybody needs to just get behind him, man. Let's give him a shot, right? Yep. I want to thank everybody in the chat for hanging out with us. Phil, Professor K, Sarah, just again, John Dorn, Daryl Yeater, everybody, man. Thomas Austin, you guys are awesome. Street King, Steven, Andy Monday, always coming through in the clutch. Elevated Shine. Is Elevated Shine, am I thinking right? Is that the guy that's the prison mock on Twitter? Am I thinking right? Is that him? There's somebody who's prison Mike on Twitter, and I laugh every time I see his freaking profile. I can hear him saying, oh, yeah, I ain't going to get into it. So controversial nowadays. Yeah. But anyway, we appreciate everybody in the chat. Thank y'all for hanging out with us. Ryan, dude, thank you so much for your time. I know you got 32 podcasts you got to get recorded right now. So really appreciate you hanging out with us. We're going to get out of here. We will see you guys here in a day or two. Get you another pod out soon. You guys are probably listening to this on Thursday afternoon. We appreciate you making us a part of your day. As always, let's go out and be the change we want to see in the world. Go Pack, go.
Left to restart the game. And this one carrying into the end zone about 4 yards deep. Here comes Dixon to the 5. Left hash marks 10, 15. Hits a hole hard. He's to the 25-30. Breaks into the clear. Keyshawn Nixon is off to the races. It's Secretary Delbot. Down the split end zone. No one will catch him. It's a touchdown. My goodness.
Came into the game playing questionable with a groin injury, didn't practice all week, and he just took it right up the gut through the heart of the Minnesota Vikings coverage unit.